This first Friday at the Walter Sobolev Building, Sea Alaska Heritage will feature jewelry by Renee Culp and healing salves, moccasins, and cedar work from Rhonda Butler. The Sea Alaska Heritage store will celebrate fall colors with beautiful copper jewelry, copper tina, and other items made from this traditional metal. Refreshments will also be available. Drop into Ward of the Chill and take in incredible art from around the state. Come by November 4th between 4:30 and 8 p.m. All are welcome. This message brought to you by Sea Alaska Heritage Institute.
It is 6 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. It's November 3rd. We're coming at you live from KTOO Studios in downtown Juno, and the weather is raining, and it's windy, and the chance of precipitation this afternoon is 100%, but tonight it goes down to 80%. Showers mainly before 1 a.m., and then rain likely after 4 a.m., lows around 38. Tomorrow we're back up to 100% precipitation. It's rain, high near 44, and tomorrow night back down to 80%, lows around 38. So I guess this is now what we call November in Juneau. It used to be October in Juneau. So we've got a great show. We always start our Thursday shows with a representative from University of Alaska Southeast, our local university that's part of the UA system. And today in the studio, Jeff Brown, who's the producer and engineer, and myself, Joan Pardis, your Thursday host, have two people representing a pretty exciting symposium that's happening next week. It's called Power and Privilege. It happens November 9th. That's the first time it's been done. And we have two representatives from UAS. We have Nathan Bodenstad and Sue Reyes in the studio with us to talk about it. Welcome.
Thank you.
So let's start at the very beginning and talk about how this idea of a symposium based on the theme Power and Privilege came to be.
Yeah, so I'm part of the Student Activities Board here at the University of Alaska Southeast Juneau campus. And every year we go to a conference. It's the National Association of Campus Activities. And in that conference, they have different sessions. And one of our students that went with me last year decided to go to the session with Tara Olson, who is the Student Activities Coordinator. And after the session, they said, we have to bring this to our campus. This is amazing. And this is something that we really, really want to get going here at UAS.
So how long have you been putting this together?
So the planning committee originally for the Power and Privilege Symposium started meeting last spring, I believe, in about February or maybe March, and came together and had students, staff, and faculty all in a room, probably about 30 people, biggest committee I've ever served on because there was a lot of interest bringing this together, and very quickly garnered support from the student government, who gave us a resolution of support, as well as Chancellor Caulfield got on board very quickly and allowed us to move forward with this project. So it's been a long time coming, but it's also very exciting.
Okay, so it takes place November 9th, and it's the theme is Power and Privilege. It's one day. It's from early in the morning to late at night. And so what is it? For our members who are listening, it's free to the public. It's a fantastic community resource. I've looked at the program, which is jam-packed with each one of these sessions, the keynotes and the breakouts, any one of them, like, you know, kind of like if you threw a dart on a board, any one of them sound really timely and super interesting. So what can people expect? So, you know, nobody knows anything about this because it's brand new, you know. So what can people expect?
That's a great question, and it's one that our students and our staff and faculty on campus have asking as well, is what can we expect when we cancel classes for an entire day and then have this instead, right? That's a really big deal on our campus. That's not happened since I've been here, and we're really kind of excited to see where it goes. A huge element for this for me personally and what we've been talking about on the committee is that we're having a huge conversation about systems of power and privilege the day after the presidential and national elections, and I think that's going to shape a lot of our conversations. But anyone who's coming to this event can expect to see a few different really high-quality keynotes from out-of-town and local presenters on decolonization, indigenous values, mental health, LGBT issues, gender-related conversations, feminism, and really anything that might key into systems of power and privilege. And so we're talking a lot about stereotyping and discrimination and prejudice as well as how we overcome and work through those, right? So this is not intended to be a session where we kind of go, oh, you know, we have these systems in our society, but rather to say we have these systems and what can we do about them and how do we address them and how do we work within them, sometimes to change them.
Right. So it sounds like a lot of ideas will be floated. Like each breakout session, each keynote will be talking about a specific topic that, of course, is in the title of each session, but they'll be bringing ideas, a symposium seeped in academia.
Absolutely. This is very highly academic, but I also think it's highly practical, right? A participant can come and ask questions, and if they're particularly interested in race or ethnicity or gender, they can look, like you said, at the program and see that in a breakout session, there's probably a session about what they're interested in. And if they don't know, they can try something new and maybe start in a new field and see maybe what they want to learn about a little bit about. But they can have these conversations and then hopefully, ideally, walk out and have some action items on how to move forward and how to create change.
Okay, so we talked a lot about the program. Where can people find the program? Because there's too many offerings to even really go through it in the time that we have here.
Yeah, there's so many. So you can see pretty much everything online at uas.alaska.edu/privilege. That's where the entire Power and Privilege Symposium website is, and that'll have information about our keynotes, all of our breakout sessions, our schedule, and information about distance delivery. So some of our sessions will also be streamed online.
Okay. And how many presenters do you have?
We have over 30 different people coming to present. So that's over 30 different sessions, I should say. And some of those sessions are roundtable and have four or five presenters, and some have just one. So we have a lot of people on board with presenting.
Okay. Well, congratulations. This is really exciting. It's November 9th at UAS. It's free and open to the public. And for more information, what's that URL again?
uas.alaska.edu/privilege.
Okay. Sounds great. We're going to take a short message. We're going to take a short break and then we'll be right back.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 3rd of November, 2016. It's the birthday of the humorist Joe Queenan, Philadelphia, 1950, author of many books, Red Lobster, White Trash, and The Blue Lagoon, Balsamic Dreams, a short but self-important history of the baby boomer generation. Joe Queenan, whose advice to aspiring writers is don't write until you're 25, don't write for the high school yearbook, don't write for the college literary magazine. Don't write that stuff. You never had any experiences. You don't know anything. Just shut up. It's the birthday of the mystery novelist Martin Cruz Smith, born Reading, Pennsylvania, 1942, best known for his series of novels featuring the Russian homicide detective Arkady Renko that began with the novel Gorky Park. It came out in 1981. His other novels include Polar Star, Wolves Eat Dogs, and Tatiana. Martin Cruz Smith, who recently announced that he's lived with Parkinson's for a number of years and lost the ability to type words, so his wife agreed to take dictation and type his manuscripts, but with the help of deep brain stimulation, which involved surgery to implant electrodes into his brain, he is now able to type and to write on his own. And it's the birthday of the man who said photography isn't a matter of taking pictures, it's a matter of having an eye. With a camera, it's all or nothing. You either get what you're after at once, or what you do has to be worthless. The essence is done very quietly with a flash of the mind and with a machine. The photographer Walker Evans, born 1903 in St. Louis. Born to an affluent family, they sent him off to Paris. He wanted to be a writer. He said, I wanted so much to write that I couldn't write a word. So he came back to New York and took up the camera. He'd gotten his first box camera at the age of 14, and he became famous for his black-and-white photographs of Dust Bowl sharecroppers, Western ghost towns, automobile graveyards. Spent 2 years riding the subways of New York City with a camera under his top coat. He disliked fancy equipment. He liked an old view camera with a slow lens. He met the poet James Agee, and together they collaborated on a collection of prose pieces and photographs called Let Us Now Praise Famous Men. Came out in 1941, all about Dust Bowl families in 1930s Alabama. Began as an assignment for Fortune magazine. Fortune magazine turned it down. Came out as a book, sold only 600 copies, but it was published again and was a big hit in the 1960s. Here's a poem for today by Joe McDougall called Bringing in the Sheaves. It's 1945, the crops laid by in October, if he was lucky, by Thanksgiving. If not, my father would throw his hat into the threshing machine with the final shock of rice from the final field. That one moment of the year, he was jubilant, cocky even, winning out over creditors and blackbirds and rot. Then the December rains, the hunger for rattling machinery, for sweat, for missing crews, wasted months of accounting and tinkering. He would have cut off his thumb and buried it had he thought that would hasten spring. Then spring, when laying his plow to the insolent dirt, he began again. Bringing in the Sheaves by Joe McDougall from The Undiscovered Room, published by Tavern Books and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, a monthly devoted to discovering and publishing new voices in poetry. More at poetryfoundation.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Programming support comes from listeners like you and GCI, providing internet, phone, and television services throughout the state. GCI, serving Alaska since 1979.
It is 18 minutes past the hour. You are listening to the Thursday, November 3rd edition of Juno Afternoon on KTOO. And the weather forecast in front of me says it is 46 degrees at the Juneau International Airport, and it's light rain, fog, mist, and breezy. Emphasis on breezy. It's a little maybe more than breezy out there. So our next guests are here, and they are Gary Kostenko and Jacqueline Tupou. They are here to talk about the Family Discovery Day, and this is hosted by the Juneau Alaska Wards. What fun. So let's talk about Family Discovery Day. What is it?
It is an event that will help you find more about your family relations, your parents, your grandparents, your posterity, and help you teach your kids how they can learn more about you and how you can learn more about the people that you grew up with.
So how does that work? So you're talking about ancestors and genealogy?
Genealogy.
Okay.
Yes.
And so what can people expect? So first of all, it's 1 to 3 on Saturday, and it is over at the Church of Jesus Christ Latter-day Saints. Latter-day Saints.
And it's the new one across from Swampy Acres, if people are familiar with the new church out there.
Oh, excellent. 10585 Glacier Highway. Thanks for making that clear. Yes. So when people show up at 1, What can people expect?
We will have an opening session of about 20 minutes where a family is going to discuss how they have gotten their entire family into doing genealogy research, family history research. And then we will have 5, 6, 7 presentations in the next 2 hours from everything from personal histories, journaling, to beginning family history research, to teenage work. And we'll have a place for the 3 to 11-year-olds to do fun things that will point them towards that research.
Sounds great. Yeah. So it's kind of like a how-to session.
Definitely. Yes. And, you know, I think sometimes we think that our kids know our stories, but they don't. You know, my children love it when I tell embarrassing stories about myself.
I wouldn't understand.
Right? It's their favorite ones. But, you know, I think even, you know, just sitting and talking with people and finding out their stories and, you know, our stories are our legacy that we leave. And so we don't want those stories to be gone. You know, sometimes we hear about people that, oh, I never asked my grandma that before she passed away. And so, you know, we want to help people to record their histories and stories. And there's so much information out there that as people are connected to their culture and their heritage and their ancestors, our children are more successful. They're more positive, more happy, and more confident in themselves.
Yeah, that sounds like a wonderful opportunity. Yeah, this is like because genealogy has really taken off, like with the advent of the internet. But now it's really like grown tremendously.
It's neat. You can do DNA tests right now. You can do any kind of things. We recently did a DNA test and found out we are 20% Nordic. So when my 8-year-old son was studying Vikings this year, he kept telling everyone, "Well, you know, I'm a fifth Viking."
Yeah. He's well suited to
Southeast
Alaska.
And for the teenagers, it's pretty exciting. We've got the theater department to donate old timey clothes.
Oh,
so
fun.
The teenagers are going to be able to Snapchat and Instagram photos of themselves recreating old timey photos of their families.
That sounds great.
Yeah. And people have talked about how blogs are now journals.
Correct.
And how you can easily tell your story and keep your story going. And it's one of my most cherished documents is a thesis that my cousin, half-cousin, wrote about my grandfather before he moved from Ukraine to North Dakota and talked about being scripted into the Russian army and building the railroad across Siberia.
Wow.
And I wouldn't have that if she had not talked to my aunts and uncles before they were beyond telling those stories.
Well, and I just love blogging. It's a big thing for us. You know, if my daughter says, "Hey, when did I lose my first tooth?" I can say, "Go look on your blog. I have no idea." But it's great, you know, and I'm not a big journaler, but I snap a couple photos and I put a couple things. And for my sons, that's how they do their weekly writing. They take pictures of the things that they do and they write about it on their blog. And it's so exciting that will be there forever for their posterity.
That sounds wonderful. So if you're just joining us, we've got Gary and Jacqueline in the studio. They're here talking about Family Discovery Day. It's a free event over at the new
Church of Jesus Christ for Latter-day Saints,
which is across from Swampy Acres.
Correct.
Right.
And it's from 1 to 3:30, November 5th, which is Saturday. It's an event where people will talk and present information about how to dig into that family tree.
Well, and a lot of people are just wondering how to get started, right? Like, they're fascinated by this idea of, like, I have ancestors and family history, but they don't know where to start. So you can just show up there on Saturday, and there will be people to guide you through starting your personal history and finding your ancestors. It's pretty exciting.
It sounds great. And it's family-friendly, all ages.
Yep.
Definitely.
3 to 100. 150.
If you and specifically activities for kids, which we'll appreciate.
Yeah, we will.
So there'll be activities for adults, and then there'll be fun activities for your kids to do while you're doing those things as well.
That sounds great. Well, best of luck with it.
Thank you.
Sounds like
we're excited. Great
event. And we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Joan Pardis. I think you caught me talking to our guests. I thought we were off the air, but we're not. It's 26 minutes past 3. Jeff Brown's at the board. We've got Tom Locher and Heather
Mitchell.
Heather Mitchell, of course, here to talk about Juno Cabaret.
Hi, Joan. Thanks for having us on the air again.
Yeah. Before we talk about this Sunday's cabaret, 7 o'clock, Rockwell, I want to hear about the whole kind of origin of
the story
it's
of
become,
Juno Cabaret.
Yeah, exactly. How it has become such an iconic, foundational piece of our art scene.
That's great, Joan. 2009, Laura Haywood got the idea to start a local cabaret show with local people, and it's been going strong ever since. We sort of outgrew the first few spaces. We've been in Rockwell Ballroom about the last 3.5 years. Heather is one of our perennial favorites in the show. She's a great singer. And we have some favorites and some newcomers almost every time. And we're really excited about this weekend's lineup, Sunday night, 7 o'clock at Rockwell Ballroom. I'll be one of the accompanists. David Shakely early will join us on the drums. We're very pleased to have him back time and time again. He's a great addition to Juno Cabaret. And then Luke Weld will be one of the other accompanists. Luke's going to accompany, Bobby Mitchell and Celia Montalto, who was recently in Hoosier Diva. She's a newcomer to Juno Cabaret. Mm-hmm. John Haywood is going to also be accompanied by Luke. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to accompany Sarah Radke Brown and Alyssa Fisher and Erica Lee and Latoya Sharon. And Latoya is fairly new to Juno, but this is her second time up at Juno Cabaret.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So Heather
is
the other singer I'll be accompanying, and she's here in the studio with us today. So
Heather Mitchell.
Heather Mitchell, that's
exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So it's pay as you can.
Every show.
There's a bar, there's food, it's cabaret, right. And that's a very big room to fill, so that's great that that's where you've been for the 3.5 years. Mm-hmm. But for our listeners, I think when people hear cabaret, everybody might have a different idea
right.
of what a cabaret is. So without breaking into Joel Gray's rendition, can you tell us what the Juno Cabaret is? And it's a certain type of...
Cabaret is an art form. It's about having a singer make an intimate connection with an audience and typically accompanied by just a pianist or a pianist and a rhythm section. In this case, we have David Shakely on the drums. Both Luke and I play keyboard bass in addition to piano. So it sounds kind of like there's a trio behind the singer some of the time, or sometimes the singer just has piano accompaniment. And they're making that intimate connection with the audience, and it's more of a listening experience for the audience. There is some table talk happening, but people can really listen to the lyrics being sung. And once that connection is made, the energy in the room grows stronger. And we see singers grow better from the beginning of the song to the end of the song, or the beginning of the night to the end of the night. It's great to see so many singers have come through the company and gotten better each time they've participated. So that's very satisfying for everybody. And the nice thing also about Juno Cabaret is we have a mix of developing singers, returning singers, people who used to sing and have been gone for a while and they want to get back into it, and then pros who always lend their talent to the stage and get up there and sing also. And it's great for younger developing singers to watch a pro and all the tips and tricks and mistakes they use and how they cover them.
Absolutely.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's great. But let's talk about the art form that you were talking about. So is it a certain type of music, or can it be anything? Could it be, from the American Songbook, blues, ballad? Mm-hmm.
Juno Cabaret, we try and celebrate the Great American Songbook.
And what is the criteria of the American Songbook?
It's a collection of songs written by a collection of composers from about 1920 to about 1960. There is some room for interpretation there. But you've heard of most of these composers, George and Ira Gershwin and Cole Porter and Harry Warren and Al Dubin and Rodgers and Hart. And a lot of the songs on the roster are from those composers' songbooks. And all of those together constitute the Great American Songbook. So we ask that each singer pick one piece at least representing Great American Songbook or musical theater, like something that would be sung on a stage. And then the other song can be almost anything they want. And people have chosen in the past pop songs and folk songs and stage songs. And it's a good variety. But mostly it's something that can be effectively sung live with just a piano accompanying them.
It's about emotion.
Absolutely. Emotion and
connection. Is what
connection, yeah. How lyrics transcend.
Interpretation, the singer's interpretation of the song.
Absolutely.
So, Heather, what are you going to sing?
Well, I usually already know, and I always, you know, offer up my selections, but I actually, we haven't decided yet.
She's narrowed
it down. It'll be a surprise. We've got several songs that are in, that have, we've been working on for a while that we'll try it out.
Because there is also the thing when you could say, you know, there are these musicians will be accompanying these singers, but, you know, when we see the movies and, you know, the singer gets up there and says, we're going to do it in B, Bill, or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's really a little bit more than that, isn't it? You're not really, like, singing right off the music, right? Isn't there some arrangement?
Very, very few of the singers who come into Juno Cabaret have us do that, just play right off the music and say, we're going to do this in this key. But it has been known to happen once or twice.
Is there actually a key of B? I don't think so.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
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 Not many singers sing in B, but some do.
I don't think so.
Some
okay.
do.
Oh, okay.
And,
it was just a random example.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I'm a D-flat girl, right? Isn't it D-flat?
A lot of the
like?
Time, she likes D and D-flat, yeah, depending on what the melody is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's great to have someone come into rehearsal who knows their song and knows how they want to present it, in what style, what format, what speed, what tempo, and just tells the accompanist, we're going to do this old standard in F and as a bossa nova, and then it's going to be about this fast. And they start counting down the band. Others, you work with them, I typically three times on an arrangement. First to pick the song and the key that they sound best in. Second time to build an arrangement, how many times through and the speed and or tempo as it's known. And then how to end it. The ending sounds good. It sounds like you really rehearsed. And then the last time we meet is for the run through. And I just came from a run through today with Latoya Sharonen. She's doing a great Cole Porter standard and then a newer song, a pop song from the 80s.
That sounds great.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's so many variables. So it's not like, absolutely. you know, you go up there and go.
Never the same show twice. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, I agree. Well, I mean, you look at some of these songs. I can think of songs that I've sung that are written for a show in the 20s, covered again as a, you know, a jazz song in the 30s, a big band song in the 40s, and in the 50s, a doo-wop song, or in the early 60s, and it's already moved into basically a pop R&B. So, I mean, I could take one song and just whatever my choices are, it could be an entirely different song every time.
Yeah, and Heather is really good at reinterpreting things and breathing new life into old standards, trying stylistic elements that that breathe new life into a song or into part of it. Like we'll start it out one way and end it another way, or partway through we'll change back and forth from a bossa nova to swing, or 3/4 to 4/4 and back. Mm-hmm. These are fun things we get to do at Juno Cabaret. And those interpretations get the audience interested, and it gets them thinking, I could get up there and sing something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we found so many of our singers. They've been audience members to start.
So if you're just joining us, Tom Locher and Heather Mitchell are here. They're here to chat about Juno Cabaret, which is happening this Sunday, November 6th at 7 p.m. at the Rockwell Ballroom. It's pay as you can. There'll be a bar there. There'll be food for purchase.
Right. And patrons who are under 21 can sit in a designated area and still enjoy the show, even if they're unaccompanied. So they just can't order any alcohol to consume.
That is a good thing. Yeah. Okay. So I just wanted to do that again. Of course, you're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. I'm Joan Pardis. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. So I have some more questions for Tom
Absolutely.
And Heather.
Absolutely. We welcome your questions.
So you were talking about all these different styles, all these different variables.
Yeah.
So, you know, this might be old news, but my family is Glee enthusiasts.
Okay.
So do you do a lot of mashups? Are there?
Yes.
You do?
Yeah, we've tried mashups where we'll take two songs, three songs by the same composer, mash them together, two songs about the same topic, whether it's a seasonal topic about, somebody's favorite food or drink, and mash those together. Singers have desire to interpret and reinterpret songs and build their own bag of songs by trying them out at Juno Cabaret, and that's the cool thing about this audience. This is the place to test out that song you've always wanted to sing. The audience is very supportive. They're good listeners, and they'll let you know afterward what they really liked, too. There's always someone in the audience willing to praise something musical about what the singers are doing. That's why we welcome beginners, developing singers, and returning singers, because it's a good confidence builder for them to be in the show hear the response from the audience and get praised for something musical they tried.
That's great. Mm-hmm. And if somebody's listening and they can't go to the show on Sunday, but they do want to maybe start the process of becoming one of the singers for the Juno Cabaret, how would they do that?
www.junocabaret.net. And we have a website there where you can sign up. We're always very interested in having accompanists join us too. So if there are people who play piano and want to try accompanying in the cabaret style, we welcome them.
And is this monthly?
We have it about every 8 weeks, every other month.
That sounds great. Yeah. So next time will be around Christmas or in between Christmas and New Year's.
We're actually going to give a holiday show on December 21st, also at Rockwell Ballroom, but it's going to be at rush hour, 4:45 to 6.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have many returning singers from past shows and some kids who are home from college.
So, nice, rush hour cabaret. Yeah. You know, the whole idea of a cabaret, I don't know, all those movies, it just seems so sophisticated. Well, which in a good way, you know?
Yeah. Juno has so much available in the arts, and this is one art form that was kind of underrepresented until Laura got the idea. There used to be a visiting cabaret accompanist who would come and do a cabaret show just once a year, and now we're doing this every 8 weeks.
Right.
We've had an overwhelming response. People always want to be in it.
So I've got a few more questions.
Sure.
So we're talking about the Great American Songbook.
Yeah.
So I would like... We'll start with Heather because, Tom, we've been chatting a lot. Heather, what is one of your favorite iconic songs from that songbook?
Oh.
And what is the one, I'm going to ask you the same question, what is the one that you think is just overdone?
Oh, yeah.
Start with overdone.
Overdone. When I Fall in Love is probably one that I hear far more than...
You need to?
I want to.
And what about the one that, you know, if you had to do Groundhog's Day and you had to sing the same song every day?
That's hard. I mean, one of my favorite songs actually from that entire era is the song that I'll probably never sing. The range isn't that great for me. It's Stardust by Hoagie Carmichael. And it's just always been one of my favorites and my dad's favorite. And I've got several different versions of it. I don't do it as well as I'd like, so I just listen to it. But it's other songs, gosh, that's like asking me which of my kids I like best. I don't think I could.
I'm not asking.
I don't think I could pick one, but okay. I mean, there are a lot of songs that, probably, you know, I never get tired of doing stuff by Cole Porter. He's fun.
That's great.
Okay, Tom, overdone and one of your favorite iconics and the Groundhog Day song.
These are hard questions, Joan.
Yeah, Juno Afternoon, it's hard reporting.
Yeah, well.
Should have fed that to us ahead of time. You know?
One of the songs people have sung over and over at Juno Cabaret over the years, apart from When I Fall in Love, which we have had a few times.
It's a good starter one.
I'll tell you, when Christina Pollock sang Stardust a couple of years ago, she wowed all of us. She totally mastered the song, and it was a beautiful interpretation. So that's a great tune by a great composer, Hoagie Carmichael. I like a lot of other Hoagie Carmichael songs.
Mm-hmm.
But I think some of the overdone pieces are let's see. They Can't Take That Away From Me by the Gershwins.
Yeah.
We've had that enough, probably. Mm-hmm. And maybe Over the Rainbow from Wizard of Oz.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of well represented.
Mm-hmm.
But someone's always coming up with a new interpretation of that tune, and we welcome that. Take some tired old standard, breathe new life into it with
like
a new
rhythm. Like a
Hawaiian
artist.
Exactly.
His nickname was Iz, but I don't even want to try his last name.
Yeah.
But that was the name of the...
Something Hawaiian.
Yeah.
Yes.
He was fantastic. Mm-hmm. That was a great rendition.
Yeah. So, and that's the sort of thing we always welcome. Sometimes people bring me a title and I'll think, well, do you have an idea about reworking it? And they do. And that's a great thing about...
Okay. What about the Groundhog?
Yeah.
If I had to sing a song every single day or play accompaniment to a singer every single day, what would it be? Probably something by Duke Ellington.
Really?
Yeah, I love that songbook. And I have a feeling Erica Lee will trot out at least one Ellington song on Sunday night for us.
She's our Ellington girl, and she's also our mashup girl.
Yes.
She does good mashups.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you must have belters and balladeers and things
all of
like
that. Crooners.
Mm-hmm. Crooners.
And yes.
Jazz cats.
Yeah. I mean, Alyssa Fisher went away to jazz vocal college, and now she's a great jazz singer, balladeer, pop singer, you know. And she's someone who can take, like, a song from a Disney movie and rework it until it's a jazz tune.
Yeah, I was going to say, she turns it into a jazz waltz. I call her our jazz waltz girl. She loves jazz waltzes.
Yeah. So we're very interested. I'm very interested to hear what she has in mind.
All right. Sounds great. Yeah. Well, you heard it here. Juno Cabaret this Sunday, November 6th at 7 p.m. at the Rockwell. There'll be no host bar. There'll be food to order. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like it's going to be a great night with lots of singers, lots of accompanists, a little percussion.
Yeah, 7 o'clock.
Percussionist.
Yeah. David Shakely early on the drums.
Right.
Me and Luke Weld on piano and keyboard bass. There'll be a short intermission. So we welcome all people, and people under 21 unaccompanied are welcome. They just have to sit in a different part of the ballroom.
Right. So. No dunce caps necessary.
No, not at all.
Or unidentified.
We just want to make sure
unaccompanied.
They know
and no
they're
bad
welcome.
Seats in the house.
Right. And I understand Celia does hair.
So, she does.
So all Celia's customers come and hear her sing. She doesn't do just hair. She sings. So, yeah.
Okay, sounds great. All right, we're going to take yet another break, and then we're going to end the show with Nancy DeCharney with Arts Up to talk about what else is going on in Juneau this weekend. Thanks so much for coming by.
Thanks for having us,
Thanks
Joan.
For having us.
Jeff.
This is Bird Note. There's at least one bird that nearly everyone knows on sight. Toddlers, teens, millennials, seniors, and whether they live in the city or out in the country, they know this bird by his song.
La, 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 la. Hear that tune? That means it's a nice day on Sesame Street.
Big Bird stands 8 feet 2 inches tall, with lemon yellow feathers, pink legs, orange feet, and a long nose. Or is it a beak? He's been a Sesame Street celebrity since 1969, cutting a colorful figure for preschool fans and their parents across the world. Often found in the company of Snuffleupagus, when off-screen, he relaxes with his teddy bear, Radar, in a huge nest in back of a brownstone at 123 Sesame Street. When Big Bird first saw the alphabet, he thought it was one really, really long word. But that didn't slow him down. Just listen.
Whoa! Abkadefki, Jekyllmanop, Quistuwixis. It's the most remarkable word I've ever seen.
Abkadefki, Jekyllmanop, Quistuwixis. Big Bird is really a big kid with a kind heart who makes friends everywhere he goes. He helps children feel okay about not knowing everything because, well, Big Bird is still figuring things out himself.
I wish I knew exactly what I mean.
For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Support for this program comes from the Prospector Hotel. The hotel is pet-friendly and features non-smoking accommodations, an on-site restaurant, and parking. Reservations at 586-3737 or prospectorhotel.com.
It is 15 minutes to the hour. You're listening to Juno Afternoon, the Thursday, November 3rd edition. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. He's at the board. I'm Joan Partis, your talking head for Thursdays. And before we get going with Nancy, I just want to say the Alaska Climate Action Network presents the film Bitter 70, a gripping real-life story of one man's act of courageous civil disobedience to stop potential oil and gas drilling in Utah's pristine wilderness. I think there's some other story going around the news cycle about that. Two showings will be Sunday, November 6th at 4:30 and Monday, November 7th at 7 p.m. at the Gold Town. So now Miss Nancy DeCharney has swum over.
Yes,
she swam over from the Jack.
It
it's
is
a very far Outreach. Yes, it's so and good. She's yes. here to tell us what's happening for the first weekend of November.
Well, of course, it's the first Friday, but let's just see if there's a little something you might be needing to do tonight.
For the last Thursday.
Yes.
Or the first Thursday.
First Thursday or whatever we got going on here. Like at 6:30, Capital City Landmarks, Stories from the Group Up. This is listen to CBJ Rory Watt and Airport Manager Patty Watto and her husband Doug and CBJ Lands and Resource Manager Greg Cheney as they build Juneau's development history from the ground up and explain how the city got to be the way it is.
Interesting.
Yeah, could be. So that's up at the City Museum. So going up, that'll be free. Tango dancing at the Rockwell. Avioki karaoke out at the McGivney's. And open mic at 8. So the theater for this week is 84 Charing Cross Road, which is at McPheeters Hall, Theater in the Rough. It's based on the book, which is based on a real-life story. They're asking that you bring a non-perishable food item, and you get a discount when you do that. It is their 25th anniversary or something wild like that. Who knew? And then you also, this is your last weekend to see Not Medea. So if you haven't gotten a chance to see that.
At
Perseverance.
One is Theater in the Rough and one is Perseverance.
And they're both getting great reviews. So
yes.
You've got a couple of weekends to do. Go do that. So then we've got, let's just go through the things that are opening for First Friday. And it's going to be such a glorious evening. So you might as well come out.
Well, let me see. Tomorrow night is only 80% chance of precipitation.
And, you know, you'll want to zip inside to see these things because it's probably not going to be quite as nice as last week. Alaska Positive over at the APK Museum. It's in its 46th year. It's the biennial exhibit of Alaska photography sponsored by the Alaska State Museum. That's from 4 to 7 over there. 4:30 to 7, we've got a calligraphy on paper and clay. You know, I'm going to switch to this piece of paper. Start at the Jack, because then you get your little flyer that tells you where you need to go. And we have Christy Nami Erickson with a new collection of growing up words, things that she's illustrated that her son has said, and they're just delightful and inspirational. So stop in there, and at the end, at 7:30, we will have a ballroom dance. And this was a costume event, a Halloween costume event. So if you're feeling sad, like you really liked your Halloween costume and you want to wear it one more time, you can come ballroom dancing. And it should be a lot of fun. That's pay as you can. And I just want to say sometimes folks are looking for a non-alcoholic event, a place to go and dance and just have a good time. And this is those. It's a great place for that. So we mentioned the museum. Over at COPA, M.K. McNaughton has Salmon Run, all kinds of prints of fish on aluminum and hand-painted T-shirts and all sorts of things like that. I don't know if they have a special ice cream.
I'm sure they do.
And even if they don't have a special ice cream,
everyone
just
has a special. Exactly.
Yes. But the Salt Cave is also having a First Friday special, so you can stop in and check that out. Learn a little bit about what the Salt Cave is all about. Alaska Robotics on Front Street has Jenny Chup. She's going to be doing tiny ghost comics, and she will have limited edition prints that are signed by hers and copies of her little ghost anthologies.
Cool.
Sounds very spooky.
That's great.
Yeah, sounds real fun. Annie Kales has Joe McCabe, W.W. Nitz, Alice Terstig, and Abby Foch. You probably know Abby's jewelry as Swallow's Journey, so a nice selection of things there. The Juneau City Museum, Gordon Harrison with calligraphy on paper and clay.
Oh, he does beautiful work.
Yes, he does. And that's open from 4:30 to 7. Annie Kales is open from 4:30 to 7:30. So you get a little bit extra time there. They have, let's see, the Walter Soboloff Building has Rhonda Butler, Renee Culp, and they're having 10% off all their copper items.
Ooh.
So, you know, the holidays are approaching faster than you thought. So it's good to start thinking about that. And that's a great place to get some really lovely items. Discounts and free admission on First Fridays only. So stop in at the Walter Soboloff Building. At the Canvas, Alan Monroe, longtime Juneau artist, has Nature's Element. It looks like charcoal on White over at Franklin Street, a new exhibit at Barnaby Brewing Company. Molly Trostel will be, she's a photographer, and the new brewery is going to have it there on 2061 North Franklin Street. Go check it out. Kindred Post has live music by Lonely Winter, and they will have some warm drinks and cozy vibes and a sale rack, and so stop in and enjoy that nice, warm, toasty thing. You've got Diane Anderson at the Juno Artist Gallery, also another longtime Juno artist, and her show is called Special Houses, paintings of the House of Wickersham, Jensen Arboretum House, the Greening Cabin, the Governor's House, all sorts of things like that. And Bustin' Out Boutique upstairs from the Juno Artist Gallery is having a show, unveiling of their newest Modeled by Role Models window and wall display. So sounds like fun. There's out at the Valley at the Pavitt Health and Fitness Club. They are offering babysitting while you go do a little
workout
and stuff like that. So a lot of things to do on First Friday. And then I suspect there's some things to do after that, like the ballroom dancing and the plays. On Saturday, it is the 64th annual ski sale.
You have to get there at 6 a.m.
Oh, my gosh.
Can you believe 64?
64.
Yes, and I believe there's some kind of, the Glory Hole is having a fundraising thing connected with that, I think. I'm not sure. There's a Shape Note singing workshop at Holy Trinity, a singing sacred harp workshop also at Holy Trinity. There's learning to do homebrew at the Juno Brew at the Alaska Brewing from 1 to 3, $10. You can learn to be a home brewer. Roots Tech Family Discovery Day. You were just talking about that, looking for your family history.
Yeah, ancestry and genealogy.
And at 5 p.m., a Stylorama Showcase. In case Extra Tufts and old Helly Hansons are getting you down, you can go to the Red Dog and learn how to dress for this weather. So that's on Saturday from 5 to 9. There is a snow and avalanche workshop at Rockwell. There's a Gold Streak music concert at Resurrection Lutheran Church at 7:30. All kinds of great musicians there. Taku Wins is presenting music of Eric Iwas. I think that's how you pronounce his name. He's the composer that was here with the symphony. And so he's working with the Taku Winds, and they are performing at Thunder Mountain High School. And at 9:30 p.m., you've got the Great Alaska Bluegrass Band. So there is a lot of music and entertainment on Saturday to keep you busy. On Sunday, Gold Town's showing something called Bitter 70, a little bit of it's a movie about some civil disobedience. And occasionally you feel like you should be civilly disobedient, so go see the movie and see what you do about that. On the 7th, we have Locals Night at Hangers on the Wharf. We have the Makerspace having their open shop, and they're teaching rubber stamping from 6:30 to 7:30, so you can make some holiday cards, learn how to make your own little print things. Tuesday is, of course, Election Day, thank goodness.
I think it should go on a little longer. I don't think a 4-year cycle is enough. Maybe we should start like 6 years.
Okay,
you know?
All right. And so knowing that most people have probably been a little stressed out about this, we're having Pet Therapy Day over at the Jack. So come over between 11:30, I think it is, and 3, and the Gaston Humane Society is bringing some very pettable, very adoptable pets and dogs and kittens to come for you. People just come and de-stress by petting some animals.
And take home a pet.
Well, you could take home a pet if you like, but you could just come over and cuddle some dogs and feel better about life. We can all agree about that sort of thing, and there'll be treats for both dogs and people. So do stop in. It's free. We just felt like we needed to do something.
It's unique. It's interesting.
Well, you know, on campus when it's finals week, we have often got pets on campus. So I thought, let's do that. So let's see. And there's an Election Day party down at the Yacht Club from 6:30 to 8:30 in case you feel like celebrating. On Wednesday, there is the Power and Privilege Symposium, which you've just been speaking about out at the UAS. There is a monotype printing at the Canvas. It's a class, actually. Wildlife Wednesday is about beluga whales. That is at the Mendenhall Library at 7 p.m. That's free. And that kind of brings, oh, there's a old-time music jam at the Alaskan Bar on Wednesday night, too. So that gives you a whole lot of things. Now, there's some stuff coming up, like a lumberjack beard and mustache contest. We're having our beard and mustache contest on December 9th at the Jack. So you got to start growing them now. It's going to be judged by Sam Keto, Gigi Monroe, and Aaron Spring.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Start growing now.
Well, thank you for coming by. And I do have some information about that Glory Hole fundraiser for the 64th annual ski sale. So it's a Thanksgiving food drive. So it benefits the Glory Hole. And if you bring a Thanksgiving non-perishable food, you know, like potatoes, gravy mix, you get a cup of coffee while you're waiting in line at the Juno's.
That'll be good on
Saturday. So they need potatoes, gravy mix, sparkling cider, stuffing, whipped cream, canned goods, green beans, corn, cranberry sauce, fruit peas, and pumpkins. So there you go.
There you go.
Okay.
Alrighty.
Well, thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
It's always great to see you. So it is about 4 minutes to the hour. Thank you for sharing your afternoon with Jeff Brown and myself, Joan Pardis, on Juno Afternoon, coming at you live from the KTOO studios in downtown Juno. The weather is about the same. It's 46 degrees. 100% chance of precipitation until this evening, which is 80%. Tomorrow, it's about the same, 100% precipitation. East wind, 5 to 15 miles per hour. We're looking at highs in the 40s and lows in the high 30s for the rest of the weekend. Thanks for joining us.